very excited, James.
Are you very excited?
I'm very excited.
Good. What are you very excited about?
Well, because you sent me a text earlier, and apparently it's our quinceañera.
It's our quinceañera. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Isn't that what it said?
You got your dress all picked out?
Yeah. Yeah, yep, did I read that wrong? I read it very quickly. I was in the middle of something.
Wrong.
I read it wrong?
You read it wrong.
Okay.
It's not uncommon for you to do.
I'm very busy.
How about sesquicentennial? This is our sesquicentennial episode.
That's not a word.
150.
100. This is episode 150.
This is episode 150, and in honor of that.
Yes. I started already. As I mentioned earlier, I opened a growler, so I'm.
It's my last Kanpai lager.
Oh boy, from my stash that I sent you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Yes, that's our 150th episode, our sesquicentennial episode.
150th episode. I don't know. I think the quinceañera would have been more interesting.
Mm.
Do you think anyone's learned anything?
Boy, I hope so. We you and I've learned a lot about podcasting, that's for sure.
We have.
Mm-hmm.
We have.
To the point where other podcasters are asking for our advice.
I know.
Which is very strange.
It's weird. It is weird. And it's our 150th episode, but that probably, let's see, it probably means we've recorded about 155 of them. Because every once in a while, a redo needs to be done.
Oh, yeah. At least. And when you get that many, who's counting anymore?
That's true.
We've got, I thought you were going to say, if we get 150 episodes, we probably have five or six fully listened to by anybody at a given time, you know, for them to shut it off.
No, I think they're listening.
No, you think
through.
So?
Yeah. For a while there, I was paying for upgraded statistics.
Oh.
And we could see partial listens.
Yeah.
As opposed to just downloads. And, well, I was interested in seeing if people were, exactly to your point, like tuning out after the early rapport and like, oh, they're talking about science now, we're leaving. But no.
Yeah, we're gone.
Yeah.
We're out of here. Well, look what they're missing now. So long, suckers. Mm-hmm. We don't need you.
You're missing our quinceañera.
You are missing our quinceañera. Yes, we don't need to see Greg in a sparkly sequin dress, no. That's for sure. Not again, anyway.
Not again. Once is enough. Not again. Yeah. No. I don't fit into that one anymore. Sesquicentennial.
Sesquicentennial, yes. And to mark the sesquicentennial, mm-hmm. instead of doing something lame like interviewing each other like we did for our centennial episode.
Yes. I thought that was fun.
I thought I would look up to see what other notable sesquicentennials are occurring in 2022.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it's to see where we fall in the importance.
Okay.
And I found some very important ones.
Hmm. I'll be the judge of that, but go ahead.
Allow me to share with you. In no real particular order. Well, first off, I'll say, if I want to cheat and say, well, we're close enough because we're recording this in 2021, at the very end of 2021. So I could say, well, Duval is having their 150th anniversary in 2021.
Okay.
But since this is landing in 2022, I can't really say that.
No.
At least as far as I can see, it's not a great sesquicentennial year for beer. There was a lot in 2020 and 2021, but not so much in 22.
Hmm,
so
that's unfortunate.
I had to dig a little deeper. Little bit deeper.
Okay.
Notable sesquicentennials. It is Pirelli Tires sesquicentennials this year. So, and they're marking it with a special 2022 calendar release. Now, if any of you aren't into girly calendars, Pirelli's known for their racing and tires and girls and whatnot. So they're usually collector's items, but. The Pirelli Tire 2022 calendar. Way to go, Italy. Good for you. But not to be outdone, it is also the 150th anniversary of Bismarck.
Bismarck, North Dakota.
Yes. They've got a whole big to-do planned. You ought to go to the Bismarck Tribune.com and see all the fantastic things that they have planned for 2022. Let's hear it for Bismarck.
All right, Bismarck. We were talking about North Dakota around the dinner table yesterday.
There you go. See,
we were to our friends in Canada. We were discussing with the kids how cold it is here and how much colder it must be in Canada, and that to you guys, North Dakota is south. And that should be some perspective on temperature. And the kids found that to be amusing. So
yeah,
Bismarck.
Yes. Hmm. However, if that doesn't really get your juices flowing, Virginia Tech, University of Arkansas, and SUNY Buffalo State College are all having their sesquicentennials this year.
Okay.
Very, very important. And frankly, there's a whole shit pile of universities that are having a sesquicentennial. So this time, you know, 150 years ago, apparently was the time to start setting up universities.
I guess so. And if you're an alum of any of those, get ready for those donations requests to start showing up.
Yep, you got to pay for all that swag for the alumni circle. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are a little bit facetious, but this one's pretty cool. Did you know in 2022 it's the 150th anniversary of Yellowstone?
The park.
The Yellowstone National Park.
Well, that's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. 150th anniversary. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the parks that launched the whole conservation, John Muir, the whole thing.
That could be a location for a hopnologist get-together. Can we bring beer to Yellowstone, or is that frowned upon?
No, you can do that. You just can't give it to the wildlife.
Oh, well.
It's probably got to be in cans, and what with the aluminum can shortage, we're going to be carrying it in Ziploc baggies,
yeah.
Which is okay. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that, just so you know. That's okay. Let's see, a couple more here. 150th anniversary. We're all going to Scotland. It's the 150th anniversary of the Golf Open Championship at St. Andrews.
Yeah, so I got nothing there.
You got nothing?
No.
You're like, golf, it's the thing where they hit the ball with the stick, right?
I didn't know they even counted, like, you know, years and events and stuff like that for golf.
They count them in strokes. Okay. Technically, I don't think it's a sesquicentennial. It's like a quadruple badger. Or whatever it is. I don't know what they are. They've got weird things. Birdies and bogeys and eagles.
Right.
So, yep. When you hit your 150th, it's a quadruple badger. The last two are pretty impressive. I haven't decided where we rank, but we're somewhere in these top three, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
It is the 150th anniversary of the Royal Needlepoint Society in the United Kingdom.
Ooh.
Ooh. These, you don't mess with these stitch bitches. They will hurt you. They're all about hand embroidering royal heraldry. So this is some serious shit. And it's a big freaking deal. So if there's anybody in the UK that wants to dish any bit on the Royal Needlepoint Society, we're all about listening to it.
Wow. That's some history right there.
It is. But this last one goes out. This touches my old man heart. It is the 150th, the sesquicentennial of the OG, Pimp Daddy, Grumpy Old Man Organization. The Shriners are 150 years
really?
Old this year. Yes. Huh. Dude, tiny little cars and mini bikes,
mm-hmm.
wearing a fez,
we
and you get to be grumpy and old. It's... I'm beside myself.
We have a huge Labor Day parade every year, and that is the highlight is the Shriners driving around in their little cars during the parade.
Give it up to the Pimp Daddies.
Very nice.
Anyway, so I thought that would just be a little thing. I'd do a little deep dive to see who else do we share 150 with.
Interesting. Very interesting. You mean Betty White's not going to be 150 this year?
No, she's 100.
She's 100.
So...
That's right. She's 100.
She's got to step it up a little bit. But
I saw something just the other day, a picture of her and a Lego set that says, you know, ages 2 to 99. And the caption was something like, Betty White realizing she's not allowed to do this Lego set anymore.
Awesome.
We've got 50% on her. Okay. Nice. Well, yeah.
There you go.
I couldn't possibly, you know, we're too close to it to decide where we rank in that mix.
Right.
But there's a lot of good stuff there. A lot of good 150s in 21. Well, mm-hmm. thank you for all that research. That's
that was a blistering first page of Google that I had to search through.
So there we are, 150 episodes of God knows what.
Right. But really, no one knows.
No, no one knows. If anyone out there can summarize it up for us, I'd love to hear in a single sentence what, you know, what the sum total of those 150 episodes means to someone.
Blah, blah, blah. Terroir is bullshit. Blah, blah, blah.
Man.
Business plan.
That episode, Terroir went live today, and we were getting more Instagram comments on that than we have on of many other things.
Uh-huh.
Because people just know.
Yeah, exactly.
They know.
Well, anyway, what are we going to talk about today that will continue to fill up, you know, 150 and onward with and onward. Things that people don't really need to know about?
Well, you sent me an article, an interesting one, about ag tech, because we're trying to read more and more on the ag tech space. And really what was so interesting about this was this concept through technology cycles. Mm-hmm. I think it can be applied to many other things besides technology cycles, but this process is the whole process called the trough of disillusionment, or is that just one piece of it?
that's one piece.
That's one piece of it. That's the piece sometimes that I like the most.
Sometimes it can feel like the largest, you know, part of the whole process.
Oh, it's a hype cycle. It's the Gartner hype cycle.
Gartner hype cycle, mm-hmm. Correct. That's what caught my attention.
Yeah.
Because I saw the hype cycle, and it's not something I knew about, but I'm like, holy shit, this maps directly on top of the small-scale hop production mm-hmm. life cycle that we've been going through for the past 15 years.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And the article itself, and we'll throw it up there on the website in the resources section, but the article itself uses this to explain vertical farming in particular, and that there's this, it's going through this cycle where mm-hmm. people were very excited and now they're not. And eventually it will come back around. But I think we need to try to explain this, of course, without a visual. And this hype cycle has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points in the curve. And it looks a little bit like a roller coaster, as most of these things do. But you start out at the beginning with what they call an innovation trigger. And that's really an idea, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, there's a thought, there's a sparkle in someone's eye.
mm-hmm.
And you get people involved, you start thinking about it, you start to publicize it a bit, and your expectations, your y-axis here is expectations.
Okay.
You fly up the expectations ladder, and you hit the top of that curve, which is called the peak of inflated expectations. Which I'm pretty sure was in the Princess Bride movie at some point. There was a peak of inflated expectations.
I think all of these were actually part some location of in the Princess Bride.
Yes, they're all in here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just as quickly, it's really the same slope. Just as quickly as you hit that peak, you crash back all the way down again.
Like down further than you started from?
Maybe not quite.
Okay,
not quite. But it looks, at least if this is to scale,
yeah,
it's close.
There's there's no despair units on the y-axis.
No despair. Remember the y-axis is expectation. So
expectations.
So right. Your expectations start to plummet on, and really the market's expectations start to plummet on what's possible here.
And, so if you cross the x-axis and you go into negative expectations, then you're into the despair region.
There's no indication of positive or negative on this axis. It doesn't, you know, the x-axis doesn't have to be at zero expectations.
That's true.
So I can't, in good conscience, I can't really answer that question.
I suppose that floor depends on how much money and time you sunk into it to get to that, you know, inflated expectation peak.
Quite true. Mm-hmm. Quite true. But at the bottom there is the trough of disillusionment, which I just love, which is the, oh, well, maybe this wasn't the best idea after all, or maybe this idea just can't happen because it's too costly or too time consuming, or, you know, no one wants to be my friend, or, you know, whatever that is.
Okay, all you hop growers out there who are currently still in the trough of disillusionment, keep one hand on the tractor wheel and raise your other one. Mm-hmm. It's a thing.
And that peak of inflated expectations, it's funny, while you're there, you probably have a lot of other people trying to pull you back to reality.
Yeah, but they're all wrong.
They're all wrong.
Yeah, they're wrong.
So you go down to the trough of disillusionment, and then you slowly start climbing back up, and you're climbing up the slope of enlightenment.
Ah, slope of enlightenment.
I'm fairly certain during that climb up that slope, you do have to fight off those rodents of unusual size.
They're there. That wall, you've there. Got to. Yes. Yeah, you have to. There's some redemption that needs to go on.
Mm-hmm. There is. You need to fight your way through. And then eventually you hit, this is so great, the plateau of productivity.
That you never get there. That's the thing that the article doesn't talk about, is like you never get there.
Mm. Well, again, no units on the time scale.
Right.
No units at all. That time is there. This is probably a multi-generational scale of time.
Well, let's be honest. The cycle time for this, what was it called? The Gartner hype something or another?
Yeah, the Gartner hype cycle.
Hype cycle, yes. So the cycle time on the overall cycle, I have seen in specialty ag, these cycles come and go as frequently as 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's like, and it's almost to a joke, it's like every 5 years, there's another something. And it's not like, and sometimes they can be occurring in parallel, but they're always there. And I think I mentioned this to you the other day. I said something like, well, the artichoke fad's going to come back around again. And we both kind of chuckled about it. But in the late 80s, everybody was going to make a freaking killing growing artichokes. Right? There's like 8 people on the planet that eat artichokes. And how are you going to make a killing? And I don't know. Ostrich farming.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. Ostrich farming in the late 80s and early 90s was the thing to do. Holy shit. If you're going to have a ranch, I'm going to have me some ostriches or emus. I don't know why, but okay. Somehow or another, it happens. Then it was cranberries in the mid 90s and mid to late 90s when I was in mid 90s when I was in grad school. And everybody and their cousin was putting in cranberry acreage. And you think hop acreage is expensive to put in? Ain't got nothing on cranberries.
Really?
Nothing. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars an acre.
Wow.
Because of all these crazy beds you got to build that are all sloped so they hold water and then drain all the one drain. It's a big deal, right? And you've got a similar turnaround time to getting a crop as you would in like an orchard crop. And so you had doctors and lawyers and business people who had no business farming getting into cranberries because these things were worth a lot of money. Well, they were because something happened in the marketplace, right, to drive the price up. And you just see that over and over and over again. It happened in hops, right?
Huh, yeah.
Everybody can appreciate that. It happened in hops. And I want to go back to mapping this hype cycle to what we experienced in the small-scale hop growing.
Let's map this to the hop cycle, because you're absolutely right. For any undertaking, I'll say, this would seem to be a logical flow.
See, the thing is it's kind of at odds with a good business plan, right? So if it is truly a hype cycle, you would think a good business plan would somehow ferret out the fact that you're in a hype cycle.
But it doesn't. Well, it's even in the second term here, inflated expectations. If you have a good business plan, you won't have inflated expectations. You'll have realistic, measured, and researched expectations.
True. And maybe that's where it all starts to go wrong, are those initial expectations. So if we go back to talking about the very beginning of this, right, where you've got that, what is that, the slope of inspiration or whatever
it's called? Enlightenment.
Enlightenement. 2007 in the Wayback Machine.
Well, hold on. Are you talking about the beginning? Beginning?
Yeah. What's at the
beginning? The beginning is the innovation trigger.
Yeah, the innovation trigger. So in 2007, I remember my wife coming in from driving home from work. And she had been listening to National Public Radio, and they had a segment on about the hop market and how hops that year, that previous year's harvest, there was all these, there was like two warehouse fires and, a, and another harvesting facility burnt down mysteriously. but all of these things happened right at the end of one of the most depressed pricing cycles in the industry, which seems counterintuitive given the steep meteoric rise of craft brewing right at that time, right?
Really so does. What yeah.
people were looking at was that, holy hell, there's going to be this shortage in hops because Anheuser-Busch pulled out of their private contracts because they got bought by InBev and canceled a bunch of contracts. So those farmers pulled up their hop yards and planted houses. And so you had this real volatile nature to the market at that time. So people, including us, were saying, there's an opportunity here. And so I think that's the trigger point where we're like, the market demand is increasing. The supply is decreasing. Is there an opportunity here? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Let's see. So we start putting pencil to paper. And then before you know it, you've got plants in the ground, rhizomes in the ground.
Yeah.
You're off to the races. You're off going up that slope, mm-hmm. right? So you had the trigger, the innovation trigger, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're climbing that steep slope.
Yep. And the trick to that steep slope, again, is the terminology there, is the inflated expectations. So mm-hmm. it to your point earlier about business plan, it betrays the stars in your eyes and, you know, what could, you know, you can't even think about what's going to go wrong because you're too busy thinking about all the reasons why this is never going to fail.
Right. And the inflated part, I mean, that's hindsight. That's retrospective.
Sure.
Because at the time, you don't have any frame of reference to know whether it's inflated or not. At least we didn't, because there was nobody else doing this, no. really, to provide us with any information. As soon as we kind of figured it out, we started running workshops, being like, here's what you can really expect, mm-hmm. if you're lucky. And then, you know, we're the ones trying to, I remember people used to say, you guys are just trying to squash competition.
Yes. Yeah. We
okay.
We actually could have named those workshops the Trough of Disillusionment.
We could have, yes.
Because we were anchoring people and dragging them down into the trough.
We were trying to. Mm-hmm. It didn't work all most of the time. No. But so if we look back, hindsight, where we get to the peak of
expectations, peak of inflated expectations,
the peak of inflated expectations. I remember after we were in the Trough of Disillusionment, I remember looking back at our original business plan and just face palming it. And mm-hmm. just chuckling to myself, because what I didn't realize, the inflated expectation there was pure mathematical.
Oh, yeah.
The business plan had said, okay, we can grow this many pounds per acre based on what? Well, based on data I'm getting from the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. because why not trust that? There's data all over the place on that. Okay, so in light of the fact I didn't have any better data, I'm going to use that. Okay, so I used that, even discounted it, like by 25%, just to be conservative. Mm-hmm. I also interviewed about 24 brewers around us, asking them about hops, would they use hops if they were local, blah, blah, blah. So I was thinking I was doing all of the right things, trying to gather those data. What I failed to realize is they lied. Sorry, any of my brewer friends that are listening. Not all of them lied, but a ton of them lied. Mm-hmm. Because what they were looking at was somebody who could grow Cascade locally that would sell them at something that was more reasonable than $25 a pound.
Wow.
Right? So they were all about it. Absolutely. So you're going to go ahead and like, all right, we're going to do this. This is the market's reset its expectations, right? Mm-hmm. Wrong. So looking back at that, when we were at that peak of inflated expectations, the data that we were using, the assumptions that we had made were not correct.
Right. And when assumptions like that, when your base revenue assumption is not correct by a, you know, by a yeah. multiple, mm-hmm. that destroys your balance sheet. Absolutely right. destroys it.
Even if you had the people committed to buying them, my whole angle was, yeah, there was a point there where Cascade were selling for $25 a pound, and we were looking at it and wow. saying, well, we can do this and make money and be sustainable at 12 to 15. And I remember some of the other non-traditional hop growers that were coming up about the same time we were just railing on us mm-hmm. because we were trying to undercut them.
Yeah.
And you're going to destroy the market and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, guys, no, I know what it's going to cost me to produce these things. Mm-hmm. This is a fair price. Yeah, right now it's less than what the spot market is, but that ain't going to be that way forever. Mm-hmm. And it's just nobody would hear.
And, you know, folks are listening to us talk about $25 a pound for Cascade. It might be a profitable venture. Someone should run the numbers to actually invest in building a time machine to go back and sell your Cascade at $25 a pound. It may net out as a positive.
Right. Even if their hops from old hops now from 2014, if you go back in time,
they're new.
I mean, the hop storage index is going to reset themselves, so you're all good. I mean, it's time. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. I'm a scientist, trust me. Okay.
Oh, lovely. That line never got anyone into trouble.
That should be a t-shirt as well.
Oh, we haven't had a t-shirt line in a mm-hmm. bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a scientist, trust me. Writing it down.
Yeah.
Writing it yep. down.
So once we realized, the first thing that hit me was, wasn't the price in the marketplace, because that stayed elevated for several years. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that once we had crop that was, you know, by about year three, and it was very good quality, the same brewers that said, absolutely, I'll buy your hops of the same quality, blah, blah, blah. Oh, do you have chemical analysis? As a matter of fact, I do, right? So we were saying we had to be at least as good as the industry standard. We were. Mm-hmm. Those brewers were saying, yeah, no, I'm not going to buy those. I'm over-contracted.
And that was a big problem for us, was over-contracting, which came on the heels of the shortage that I'll put in quotation marks. The prices right. were so high, people were, you know, brewers were freaking out. They were contracting so their prices wouldn't get worse mm-hmm. while we are in ramp-up stage.
Correct. And that lasted. That excuse lasted because a lot of those brewers signed 7- and 10-year-long contracts.
Yep.
Locked in at $20 to $25 a pound for Cascade. Only to have 5 years later that price crash, you know, on the spot market. Mm-hmm. And they're still paying that price for Cascade.
And you wonder why Cascade is falling out of recipes. That was the only mm-hmm. way to not have to buy it at those prices.
And, you know, replace it. And now nobody uses it. So now the market is responding. And the price is so low. And acreage is declining because nobody wants it. Mm-hmm. In another 5 years, people are going to want it. And nobody's going to be growing it.
Right.
They're a part of the market cycle that impacts these slopes. But that was as we started sliding down into the trough of disillusionment. We're realizing this. We're like, wait a second. I based my business plan on feedback from potential customers. And let's say 1 in 5 are actually buying what they said they would buy, as we had kept them in the loop. It's not like I asked them to be part of my survey for my business plan, didn't talk to them for 3 years, and then tried to sell them hops. Mm-hmm. No. It was all along helping them with recipes, showing them, you know, what is our value add as scientists and engineers, blah, 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 to say, okay, hey, we got our hops. You know, we talked about this. You know, I know you guys don't want contracts, so let's just work on this as, you know, business people. Yeah, no, I'm going to pass. What? What do you mean you're going to pass? We talked about this. I'm over contracted, or I'm contracted for that, or what, blah, 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 whatever it happened to be. This is Wisconsin.
Right.
Now we're sliding way down into the trough of disillusionment.
Yes.
We're at the bottom saying, mm-hmm. now what are we going to do? Because our business plan required us to be basically selling the hops that we are producing. And we are invested.
Right.
Personally invested, monetarily invested mm-hmm. in this operation. Now what are we going to do? That's where the slope of enlightenment comes in. And I think we could also, the at the bottom of the trough of disillusionment, or maybe slightly up the slope of enlightenment, is, I think, probably the most common place to find your pivot point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's no way you're going to dig out of the trough of disillusionment unless you pivot somehow.
Right, right. You don't just start climbing back up those same expectations. Because then, right, then you wouldn't have fallen down the hill in the first place.
So the way I see it is right about then is where we figured out, uh-oh, what are we going to do basically to drive revenue to keep us afloat?
Yep,
and that, because mm-hmm, brewers that said they'd buy our stuff didn't. Now what? Well, we got to find other stuff to sell. What are we going to do? Right? How else are we going to generate revenue? Well, what else can we do? What else are we good at?
Yep, we teach.
We're good teachers. So I'm assuming that, and this is still, there's a lot of other people that are still in that slope of inflated expectations, get, you know, climbing it quick. And so there are a lot of people eager to find out about growing hops and can you really do this? Well, we had gone through that peak and down into the trough. So we're here to tell people what we consider the straight dope now.
Yeah. But to your point, some people looked at it and said, you're just trying to get rid of your competition. You know, we're, mm-hmm, no, we just, we're watching you guys climb this thing and going, take a look at us down here. This is where, yeah, you're heading for.
Don't be us. Learn from what we did. And people, even though they were paying to come to the workshops, they still couldn't buy the fact that we weren't trying to talk them out, right, of this.
There's a reason that your sponsor at AA has gone through the program before.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So we were there trying to do that. What else did we do? We sold equipment, right? So we had the buying 3060 and dryer designs and stuff like that. Because people that were still in it, we were seeing a need in the marketplace. And we said, there is a place where we can address, right? We can apply our skills there and generate some revenue to keep, frankly, the hop farm going.
Yeah, everything that we were successful at, we were able to monetize. And the thing that, to your point, caused us to hit the trough in the first place was sales and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the part that I know we've talked about this before. We've admitted this freely before. That was the one where it was a lot harder than we thought it was going to be, and we weren't prepared for it.
Right. Absolutely not. We undervalued it as part of the puzzle,
mm-hmm,
you know, a piece of the puzzle to solve here. And I still think we would have hit the trough.
Yeah.
Just because if you look at what we had to do for sales as part of that pivot, it was 80% of our crop left the state and 30 to 40% of the crop that left the state left the country.
Yep.
So those hops are going to find a home somewhere. And were we making good on our whole triple bottom line thing? No, we weren't, because we couldn't freaking keep them local.
Yeah.
We wanted to. But we couldn't, because brewers weren't buying. Now, some of you out there in your regions have a different experience, and I hope it's better than ours was.
Because really, I mean, we've never talked about this, you and I, but I'll say out loud that if I always love doing that.
Yeah.
If during that original innovation trigger, if we had for a second thought that that higher percentage wouldn't have stayed local, we probably wouldn't have climbed that hill.
Right.
That was part of what was so important to us. If you told us at the beginning, you know, what was the number, 30%, 40%, we're going out, mm-hmm, of the country, we would have said, then why would we go down this path?
Right. Why would we do that? We would only do that, as we found, as a pivot, mm-hmm, in order to try and keep things sustainable from a economic standpoint.
Yep.
So we did that. We did a lot of things in order to keep that revenue going so that we could climb that slope of enlightenment. And, you know, the last thing that we did is we added the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God we did that.
Oh, yeah. That was huge.
We saw another gap in the market. And you've heard us talk with Julie and team from Sandy Ridge, too, about this, that just the quality of the plants that were coming onto the market was just abysmal.
Yeah.
They were disease or full viruses. They were just, the quality was low. Field survivability was low. And we're like, we can do this.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like anything else, you still had people climbing that original hump there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were more people wanting plants than plants that existed. So what happens? You get suboptimal stuff out there in the market.
Right. And we took some crap for people saying, well, you guys sell everything but hops, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no, not true. We sold a lot of hops. Mm-hmm. Thousands and thousands of pounds. But was it our primary revenue generator? No, it wasn't.
Not really.
Because of the conditions of our region that we were in terms of the brewers we could touch easily weren't buying. And without investing in that sales and marketing arm to really broaden our reach, that wasn't the first place for us to go for revenue in order to keep the lights on.
Right. We had other things that we were just better at.
We could run the greenhouse. We could make equipment. And we could reach more people. And frankly, we were marketing more to growers then than we were anything to brewers.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's how we pivoted. People are like, well, wait a minute, you guys didn't sell hops to brewers? Like I said, thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. Yes, we did.
We did. It's funny, though, but to your point, like harvest and sales to brewers was, I'm not going to say it was a nuisance, but
it was a loss leader.
It was a loss leader. It was absolutely a loss leader.
Yep. And it's ridiculous to say that. You'd be like, what do you mean your entire hop farm operation was a loss leader? Yes. Mm-hmm. A very expensive loss leader,
And yet, frankly. In order to do the other things that we did well, we had to do that partially so that you could see that we were actually a hop farm. But that's how we learned. That's how we learned. We wouldn't have known how to build a harvester. We wouldn't have known what was necessary in the greenhouse if we weren't also customers of those items.
All of the field data that I've taken and observations I've made as a scientist and a farmer, understanding what's impactful and what happens when this happens and blah, 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 all that needed to occur as part of that slope of enlightenment to get us to that plateau of productivity, mm-hmm. right? Where we're selling equipment and it was economically viable. It wasn't emotionally or mentally stable, which is why we stopped doing it. The greenhouse.
Okay, look, hold out your hands. Can you count to 10?
Yeah.
Then we're okay.
Yeah. I got it.
That was questionable at times.
Yeah, exactly. I got it. The greenhouse, great. Consulting, actually picked up. That worked well. Teaching, gangbusters, right? It all went well. So we had pivoted to get out of that trough, and the trough was a response to the anticipation that what our local market had told us was going to be correct, and it was not. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was located somewhere else, let's say in the Northeast or in the Southeast, anywhere but Wisconsin, right, that had a different market mentality amongst its brewers, we may never have had to pivot to those other things because we could have sustained ourselves just off of hop sales to brewers.
Sure.
But we were not in that position. And so people, even now today, as we've climbed up into the plateau of productivity and now, you know, we sold the farm off, we sold all of that so that we could focus on this and share what we learned from that. People ask me, not infrequently, they is like, well, would you still be in hops right now? I said, I don't know, because I don't know that I would have been able to survive COVID from a labor standpoint.
Yeah,
it wouldn't have had anything to do with the brewing market. It would have everything to do with finding help to actually grow the hops.
Yep.
So that would have been issue number one. And frankly, there's a lot of growers who got into hop production that we sold plants to and that we were working with consulting on that went way past their peak of inflated expectations and crashed in the trough and never decided to pivot out of it. So they just closed up shop. Mm-hmm. Those were part of our customer base.
They were. And look, we've seen that happen. We've seen that happen during our tenure as Hopnology. We've seen folks who've been listeners who have since moved on because they're done. This is not an easy business. If you think it is, you're not listening clearly, and never
right.
have.
Right. Right.
But yeah, to your point, and we talk about pivoting all the time. That trough, and I will post this up on the website, but. If I forget to, someone please remind me, but definitely look up this Gardner hype cycle because it looks like a legit roller coaster where you come down those expect that peak of inflated expectations, and that trough looks scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's because you're hurtling at the ground at pretty much terminal velocity, and you just don't know where the bottom is. Right? It's like if the very bottom of the trough was covered in fog, mm-hmm. you can't tell when you're going to pull up. And we all go through this to one extent or the other. And I just felt that this was very, very fitting. As I said, I just wanted to mention this. We're running slightly long, but I had mentioned earlier that these things in specialty cropping happen in parallel, but not exactly at the same time. They're usually staggered by like half a cycle.
Yep.
Did I mention the word hemp in this conversation yet at all?
Nope, not yet, but it's, yeah.
How about marijuana? Uh-huh. How about hydroponic indoor hop farming? Right? How about aronia berries? So you've got all of these things that go through the same freaking cycle. And because at some point there's an innovation trigger or a perceived innovation trigger that starts this whole thing off.
So when does the IPA Fed crest that peak of inflated expectations and crash to disillusionment? When is it going to freaking happen?
Well, for me, it happened about 7.5 years ago.
But thank our lucky stars, we can't all be you.
Isn't that the truth? You don't want all the medication. I'm a scientist, trust me.